Should that be the title? The Mass.
Yeah, it can be.
We should just keep that
weird
as the
things
intro.
About the Mass. We're not even weird things, just things about the Mass.
So today we're going to talk about the Mass.
Right. It's a good fit because I know we didn't design it this way or plan it this way, but tomorrow I will be talking about the Mass with my students.
In class?
Yeah, in my morality class. The third commandment, thou shalt keep the Sabbath.
The class about the Mass.
Class about the Mass.
So, I think as Catholics, there's a lot of interesting observations, some funny, when people talk to me or make observations about Catholics or Catholicism, I think a big point is the Mass. They're
right.
Like,
yeah.
Why do you stand up and sit down?
Yeah, just as a disclaimer, this is not going to be, sort of an explanation of the doctrines of the Mass, right? I think, initially started brainstorming about just our experiences with the Mass, I guess, and questions and observations, like you mentioned. And in fact, a few weeks ago, to intro another topic, I asked the students what they thought, like an alien observer would think, if they came and observed the Mass. You know, would it make sense to them, and how would you explain it? Like, how would you explain the point of it, and why people would go? And I think it is interesting, especially when you go and have no idea what's going on. It's just from like a sociological point of view. To like an outside observer point of view, it'd be interesting to look at it. Just
well, I think
from
the,
that point
it
of view.
Seems to me that the structure is couched in a lot of history and tradition that I would guess to say most Catholics don't know or don't remember or don't really think about. So it seems like a lot of ritualistic things with no real meaning, which as a counterpoint is interesting to watch when you have. Which I've actually maybe never, frankly, these the structure of a evangelical service, which is it seems to be much less of the rituals and much more of the singing and fellowship and talking, or listening to the pastor talk about different things. And so while that occurs in the homily of the Catholic Mass, there definitely is a lot of structure and a lot of things that are there because they're echoes or remnants. I don't even want to say it that way because it makes it sound bad, but, they connect us to a legacy and a history.
Yeah, and not just of Christianity, but even into Judaism. And there are elements of the Mass that harken back to ancient Jewish traditions. And so, yeah, you're right. There are thousands and thousands of years of tradition in the Mass, and it's all very intentionally done and designed, but you're exactly right. The end result is that it seems ritualistic and it seems strange and formulaic, and sometimes that structure turns people off, and even for Catholics who are faithful and committed to staying Catholic and committed to going to Mass, a lot of that ritual and a lot of that formula and structure seems strange.
I think some of it can seem maybe like saying the rosary can just seem repetitive, and if you don't really know why. So for an example, I'm sure there's a good reason, or I don't know, maybe there's not, but I don't exactly know why in the rosary there's a decade of Hail Marys. When I say it, I just decided to start doing 12 because I like 12 better than 10. But I don't really know why there's 10.
It's
it just
not
seems
what Mary
like
wanted.
That's true, but I mean, maybe because we have 10 fingers, or because the Romans like things in tens. I don't know. I just don't know. But for the Mass, there's also a lot of things where, I'm sure there's a reason why we stand at this part, sit at this part, or kneel at this part. In fact, I do know specifically, at least in some cases, why you'd kneel in different areas. But there is a lot that, I don't know. I guess I just don't know. And to be completely honest, I don't know if I always have the motivation to research and find out. I will Wikipedia a whole lot of things. I spent half an hour the other day reading about the Amulet of Avalar, which is the amulet that Sophia the First wears on the Disney Junior show that Hope likes Sophia the First. Reading about the amulet, the power, the history, how it relates in the Disney universe. But when it comes to the Mass, the Eucharist, or not the Eucharist, the Eucharist and everything, the whole components of the Mass, at least recently, I have not Wikipedia'd it. I haven't read up about it. And also, are we the only ones that call it the Mass? Do you know?
I don't know. No, I don't. Well, certainly not Roman Catholics would not be the only ones. But I'm trying to think of anyone who's sort of in the tradition. Yeah, I think the Protestant groups no longer call it the Mass. They just call it their service, right?
Yeah. A lot of people say church.
Sure.
Take them to church. But I sometimes say Mass, and I don't know if other people... I think they know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I don't think everyone does.
Well, let's get into it a little bit. Our cousin had a question about what we think of people... This was in response to one of our previous episodes about prayer. And she was asking about people who pray in a way that's not in sync with everyone else during the Mass, right? Is that... Was that the question?
It's the essence of it, that not necessarily in sync, but I think maybe praying, the tone I got was that, and I think we've witnessed it too individually, but people that may pray loudly or seem to be wanting to or wanting to draw attention to them when they pray. And
right.
So she had commented that it's distracting, and I would feel the same. And earlier today, I had mentioned the same thing, not necessarily from Mass today, but, you know, I think at our old church, there used to be either one person or a couple that would always stand up very obviously before everyone else. It wasn't like people are in the middle of standing up and they happen to be standing up first. Sometimes as much as 30 seconds or a minute before everyone else stood up, like it hadn't transitioned from one part to another, and they had stood up, and it was extremely obvious. Okay, amazing, congratulations. You know what the next step is,
right? But, or even that, and people who are sort of a half beat ahead for the Apostles' Creed or for any of the prayers.
Sometimes I appreciate it because I'm embarrassed to say a little bit, but I don't really know by heart the Apostles' Creed or some of the things in the Mass. So especially when they made the changes recently, I don't know all the changes. So I do appreciate it when everyone speaks together. And sometimes I don't mind it if someone's slightly ahead, because then I can sort of listen to them and be able to pray in unison with everyone else.
Sure.
Which is simultaneously why I dislike it, for instance, like in Mass today, because we were in the back, when no one is praying out loud.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of mumbling because I'm trying to hear what the congregation inside on the other side of the glass is saying, but I can't, and everyone in the back is just not even putting forth the effort, not even caring.
Right.
Or maybe, well, that's not fair, but they don't seem to be moving their lips, nor is sound coming from their mouths.
Right. If you're just to objectively state what was happening. But let's start with the first one, the people who stand up a couple seconds ahead of everyone else, or pray especially loud, or pray, you know, half beat ahead of everyone else. What are your thoughts on that? How does that strike you, just sort of instinctually?
Well, I think there's two. The more instinctual response is, I don't know, for lack of a better word, sort of a hater. Like, oh, why are you trying to draw attention to yourself? My initial reaction is that you just want everyone to notice you. Okay, let's see how great you are. But then at the other side, when I actually take a few moments to think about it, you know, who am I to say? I do appreciate when people, for instance, if someone was singing loud or very passionately, or if someone was crying while they were singing, I don't think I'd be judging them in a way that's like, oh, look at this emotional, loudly singing person trying to be too much into it. No, I wouldn't be like that. I think I would appreciate it.
Yeah.
And in a similar way, if someone is praying, on one side, on one hand, it can be distracting, but at the other hand, you know, just like when someone's singing karaoke, doesn't matter the quality, but they're really getting into it. I think everyone likes it and can appreciate it because they can see that passion or that engagement.
Yeah.
And so when someone is doing that, I think it's completely, it's completely subjective from my point of view. But I think there's some level where I can appreciate that. Like, oh man, that's good. We should all be like that.
Yeah, I think that's, I'd agree with that. I think we should all be like that. I think we all should be anticipating what the next move is going to be, yeah, right?
Excited
and enthusiastic and vocal and into the mass. But it is intentionally a communal activity. It is not a whole bunch of individuals who happen to be reciting the same thing at the same time. It isn't a whole bunch of immigrants who are becoming U.S. citizens and they all happen to be saying the oath, which is an individual oath, and just to save time, they have everyone say it at the same time. And that's not what it is. It is intentionally a public, communal, community activity. And so much of the Mass is designed to build that sense of communion and community, and for people to act within that. Now, I think that's, it's great if people can act as leaders within that and be people who influence others within that. And to that extent, I think, that's what we're talking about in part is just having people educated. I mean, probably a lot of people who, I don't know, again, we can't guess intention, right? Who knows why someone is reading or praying or singing very loudly. Maybe they have that problem where they can't do voice modulation, right?
I don't know if you remember, but I don't think it happens this much these days. But when we were growing up, I feel like there would always be people in the pews that were also probably members of the choir, or they had been, or maybe somewhere else, but they would be using that choiry, I don't know the name for it because I don't sing. I'm not in the music world, but they do that quality of their voice where it's like, ah,
yeah, the vibrato.
Yeah, and they'd be singing like that beautifully, but more loudly than everyone else, but still amongst us. And it would be distracting. And, there is that sense of like, oh, very nice.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Great job. And I think about that. I mean, another thing that happens is some parishes have different practices for standing and kneeling, which you had referred to earlier. And so there are times where it is a particular parish's practice to stand during, say, the consecration. Mm-hmm. And then there'll be that, there's a handful of people. Sometimes it's me that kneels down, sort of like, well, we should be kneeling at this point.
I do that too. I was the only one kneeling in the back today. Look, you guys, not even praying or singing.
Well, I think what's different in your case is that you are in communion with the rest of the people on the other side of the glass, right? It just happens to be the people who are standing behind the glass that are not kneeling, and only because they chose not to take a seat or for whatever reason. But that's different from where the whole parish, say, has no kneelers. In some parishes, mm-hmm. that's the case. And then you have that one person insisting on kneeling down. And in those cases, I think, too, again, it's a mix of sort of like, okay, well, why are you drawing attention to yourself? And then at the same time, sort of going back and forth. So like you said, having those two instincts, the first instinct is, why are you drawing attention to yourself? And then the second instinct being, well, no, this is his way of honoring God at this moment. Who am I to judge that? But then sort of coming back and being like, well, if you want to honor God on your own, in your own private way, regardless of what everyone else is doing, then why would you come to Mass? Just kneel on your own. Like, you come during adoration hours and kneel during the Eucharist then. But for me, the community aspect trumps whatever you as an individual might think, the community should be doing at that moment. Yeah. Because, quite frankly, it's not like God wrote down in Scripture, I want you to put together a Mass. Mm-hmm. And when during the Last Supper, Jesus did not say,
make sure you kneel.
That's right. This is my body. Now take and eat, right? Do this in memory of me.
And during that part,
you should be kneeling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it reminds me, it sparks a memory. I don't know if you remember this or if I was just sensitive to it. Lolo used to do that in Mass.
Right.
He used to pray slightly ahead? He's either slightly ahead or slightly out of sync. And, you know, his voice and accent were distinctive, so I could hear it even if we weren't, you know, in the pew next to him.
Yeah.
Laughing at some, you know, at the book or something. You know, I could usually hear it. And I don't, you know, maybe he was, I don't think he was trying to draw attention to himself.
No.
If anything, I think he was just trying to be very confident and, I guess, self-assured in his prayer, in his worship. But I think it does go back to what you had mentioned, the whole idea of the Mass supposed to be like a community-building event.
Right.
You know, as the celebration as a people. And I wonder if today, in our society, not necessarily here in Baltimore or in Texas, Maryland, but just in general, in America, if a lot of us are not used to these community things, structured community things. Because I think if people do that, they just, it's not, I don't think it's intentional or definitely not malicious or even selfish. It's just that people either forget or just don't have a hard time incorporating the idea that, hey, it is something that we all are supposed to do together. I feel like we are supposed to be acknowledging each other, being friendly, like, I don't know, smiling or like having some, like acknowledging someone during the peace.
Right, right.
You know, there's all these weird things, but our just society in general isn't really like that.
Right, and we live in, you know, individualistic society and a society that's increasingly mobile and on the move. And so whereas once the parish was made up of people who were neighbors and went to school with each other, mm-hmm. and whose parents went to school with each other and who know each other well, you know, a lot of times in big cities, I mean, even Baltimore, you have these Polish churches where, you know, it's all like true. A Polish community. Now, you know, you have so many suburban churches where the parishioners come from all over the country, not just all over the state or even all over the county, but from all over the country. They may not know each other. And the only thing that binds them is the Mass, which is potentially a very powerful thing. I mean, yeah. I think that's a pretty cool thing about the Mass, is you can go anywhere and pray in unison with other people who you may not have met before. But it does require, I think, an additional effort on the part of the leaders of the church to generate that sense of community. And that's not just the priest. I mean, what I mean by the leaders of the church is the people who feel invested in that church and you know, want that church to be a place for their families.
And I think when it does happen, it actually seems unusual. For instance, at Nativity, they're very intentional about trying to be welcoming and friendly. And so when you come in, we usually come in late, so there's still some greeters at the door, but the few times that we've come on time, there's an abnormal amount of people that are smiling and expressing that they're happy that we came and welcoming us and holding the door. And so it does seem, you know, it's unfortunate in that way that it seems strange and unusual or maybe even uncomfortable that it's such like, oh, hey, you know, this big social event. Not social event, but such a, everyone's so friendly and really excited to be part of Mass, that the way my experience has been growing up and being Catholic now as an adult is that's something that, you know, when I think about it, I feel like people should be like that, but it's not. And so when it happens, it seems strange.
It's not just strange, but I think certainly in urban context, but even in suburban context, when someone seems abnormally nice to you, it's not only strange, it's suspicious.
Yeah.
And so it's met with a certain kind of suspicion as to whether those feelings are genuine or artificial and, you know, whether you should be on guard or not, which is also unfortunate. But, you know, that's part of the reality of it. And, yeah, I mean, I think that's very different. The cultural difference, I think, of, you know, a lot of the Masses in the Philippines, they now have greeters and things like that, too. And it does feel different because there's a natural warmth and, like, a natural sense of happiness and joy that a lot of Filipinos can tap into culturally. Sure, yeah. And so if people are, you know, like you walk into the church and people are like, good morning, sir. It's, you know, it's like just natural. I mean, it's like, okay. Yeah. I experience this in other contexts too. So
yeah,
this warmth and positivity doesn't seem out of place, right? It seems to fit. That is odd then in a U.S. context where a lot of times the parishes feel, quite frankly, you're sort of caught between two alternatives. And one alternative is to have that kind of atmosphere and then it seem odd or seem out of place. Or on the other hand, you not have it and then it seems kind of cold and, and alien. Yeah.
And then in the transition, I think it's also may feel definitely unusual, sometimes even, I don't want to say awkward, but slightly forced. For instance, I appreciate it, but how Monsignor Rick at the end of Mass nowadays seems to always say, are there any visitors? Yeah. Any visitors from out of town? Who here is from a different parish or from out of town? Raise your hand and we welcome you. Thank you for joining us. You enrich us with your presence. And I do like that, but it's usually at the end. And so, just like a class or something, I was like, all right, let's, I want to get to the sushi buffet, or whatever it is, I'm thinking about those things. But on the other hand, I've also been at Masses where, and I also like this too, where people will say, you know, take a moment and greet those around you, and, you know, in the fellowship. And I do like that. I actually really do like that. For our wedding, we had asked Father Echo, who we didn't really know. Jen's family had known of him. They weren't even he was a hospital priest, I think, at some hospital in the Bay Area. And we had asked him if we could do that because it's our wedding. We may have guests that don't know each other. And so could we start off the Mass with people with just, you know, some sort of something like that, you know, like, please, you know, take a moment and greet those around you. And he... not vehemently, but outright, not necessarily forcefully, but definitively said, no, we're not going to do that.
And interesting.
He just said, you know, he said something like, this is not, he said something like, this is not a social time or something like that.
Interesting.
And I think we were both turned off by it, not enough to put forth the energy to find someone new.
Right.
And I think he was fine. You know, he gave his homily was fine. But, you know, I think the elements of community are good for everyone to keep in mind. I think just like praying or whatever, I think there's different ways to do it.
Yep.
But it's striking to me that even as I talk, there's a strange dichotomy where I may be critical of someone that's praying out of sync because they're like really into it. And I want them to all kind of... Not that I want them, but it's comfortable for me when everyone conforms to the same pace and tone of how they pray or how they sing. But then in this instance, I'm also critical of someone that doesn't want to move away from the norm by having something so small as to invite people to say hello to each other. It's an interesting thing, you know. I think just as an adult American Catholic, I often feel like I don't know as much about the Mass as I should.
Yeah.
And so I make my own assumptions and my own judgments about what I like and what I don't like. But really, like a lot of Catholics too, I don't really put forth any effort to try to understand or to evolve my understanding of, you know, components about church.
Well, let me ask you something, because, you know, we've had experiences of church, as we're kind of hinting at, that seem, you know, at best kind of funny and awkward, and at worst uncomfortable and kind of cold, depending on where we've gone to church at any given time. And now you've also brought in this piece about not understanding certain pieces. But for you, I mean, what keeps you coming back to Mass, and what have been some of your experiences that help you, that motivates you to go, even if it seems kind of weird, and even if there's that guy who's praying too loudly, or even if you're in a particular church where people are kind of cold, or awkwardly or maybe suspiciously friendly. You know, what motivates you in that sense?
That's a great question, and I don't know if I have a great answer. I do know when I go to St. Bernardine's, and of course I have a high appreciation and respect for Father Rich. I like his homilies. But really, in that environment in the city, because they have the gospel choir and because of the tone and the atmosphere and the culture of that church, I really do love it, you know, to the point where I have been moved to tears during songs or just really appreciate people, you know, hugging or introducing themselves or being so friendly during the peacetime. You know, just a whole lot of things about it. I really do like it. I really do love it going to Mass there. It's one of the more moving and touching masses and churches that I think is in the area for me. And then there's also times I'll think about, you know, just good memories, thinking about good memories. I like our memories when we were in high school going to Mass at Loyola before class. I do like the Nativity Youth Mass. I like the energy of it and the music and stuff like that. So there's all these other Masses and churches and services that I do like. But why do I keep coming to St. Joe's is a good question because, and not trying to be critical of it, I do have a love. It is our home. I feel like it is our church home. So maybe that's the only reason why. I can't say, the choir is great. I think that they're awesome.
Yeah.
But they definitely, they're not, they don't necessarily do anything that, what's the word? Like, at St. Bernardine's, as a counterexample, I'm just not used to the singing and the style. The songs are new,
yeah.
You know, and so at St. Joe's, you know, the songs in a good way are familiar. Sort of used to the way that they sing it. In fact, when I go to other Masses and they sing the same songs in a different way, it seems strange.
Right.
But it's and you know, I really do like Father Rich. I really like what he has to say, and I'm still, and I don't really know Monsignor Rick that well, nor the deacons and stuff like that. So I know I'm probably painting a poor picture of St. Joseph's, but I think what it really comes down to is, despite all of that, so maybe it's not Sister Act, you know, as far as the music goes, yeah. And maybe sometimes when we go in, people aren't excessively friendly.
Right.
And for me, it's sort of slightly a pet peeve when all the handicapped spaces are taken, so we have to park far in the lot, in the parking lot, because we need the space for the ramp to come out for William's wheelchair. And he's the only one with a wheelchair in the Mass that, yeah. that we can see. Yeah, so there's different things that will be like, you know, are not necessarily the most amazing components of Mass. But I think I really do come back because despite all that, it still does feel like home.
Right.
Probably like a home, like a home, like someone's where they grew up. You know, maybe it's not the best hometown. Maybe their house isn't, you know, fantastic or gorgeous. Maybe they have issues with their family. But I think for a lot of people, definitely not for everyone, maybe not even the majority, there is a lot of comfort in being home or going home or staying home. And so there definitely are a lot of great things about St. Joseph. But it's interesting, even as I'm really just talking out loud, I don't have a great answer as to why I keep coming to St. Joe's, except for that it is close, but not as close as St. Francis Xavier or some of these other churches.
Yeah.
But I think because it is our home.
Sure.
It is comforting and familiar. The usher in the back has been there since we were kids. I feel like he looks the same in my memory as when we were kids, and he was in the usher talking to Lola or something in the back.
Yeah.
You know, the priests have changed. A lot of the faces have changed, but there's a lot of comfort in being in that familiar space.
Yeah. How about Mass in general? I mean, why? What motivates you to go to? I mean, if not St. Joe's, what motivates you to go to Mass in general?
Without sounding too cliched, I think it does really feel like nurturing or nourishment. The only other example I can think of is, I was talking about it recently because I went to New York yesterday to see Guru Dan. And, you know, when Guru, and you got to see him, you know, yeah. one time when you came to visit. And so, of course, during his seminars, just like in his class, in his, you know, classes, his daily classes or weekly classes in Los Angeles, he does a lot of teaching of techniques and drills and stuff like that. But he also tells a lot of stories. Tells a lot of stories and has a lot of, you know, sometimes he's talking about Bruce Lee or just his experiences growing up in California. Different kinds of things, but, you know, with the techniques, for instance, a lot of times, you know, now that I've been training with him since 2003, it's been a long time, so there's a lot of stuff that's familiar. And even with his stories, a lot of the stories he will repeat, you know, from time to time. So it's not like everything he says is the first time I've heard it. But there was something that there is something that I really miss about seeing him on a regular basis and feeling nourished in that kind of way.
Yeah.
And to me, I am definitely not the most devout and concentrated Catholic. When I'm in Mass, I look around at the windows or I look at what people are doing or wearing. I think about what I want to eat afterwards, or I'm just trying not to fall asleep, whatever it is. So it's not like I'm super into the Mass all the time. But I think the act of it going week for week, to me, it's not necessarily embarrassing, but, you know, I may leave Mass, frankly, having missed the readings or missed the homily, or maybe didn't pay attention to the homily, and, you know, frankly, can't always tell you what they talked about in Mass. Mm. But there's something about it that leaves me feeling nourished. I don't think it's just for my own kind of ego, like I check the box off and, oh, it makes me feel good because I check the box off. To me, I think it is more than that. I wish it was something much, much deeper than that. But there is something that does feel like nourishing and nurturing, I guess, about going to Mass.
Sure. And I think it's interesting that you said that you might not always remember, you know, what said at the homily, because I think what kept me in the Mass for a while was both at Loyola High School and then at Loyola College, you know, having these Jesuits give these fantastic homilies. I'm like, oh man, like I really learned something, or like it really inspired me or really challenged me.
They're able to structure it so good.
Yeah.
You know, storytelling.
Yeah, the storytelling and the takeaways and everything was just sort of real simple and clean and memorable. And then at Loyola College, the sense of community that came with Mass and a really nice, really, you know, warm chapel choir and even gospel choir from time to time would perform at Mass. And so it was great. It was just, it really felt nurturing in that sense. I mean, fully, like you just felt fully alive and fully engaged. And then after that, it's a struggle because it was a struggle because it didn't always, you know, relate to the homilies. Or very often the homilies can be very sort of abstract and doctrinal without being as relatable in terms mm-hmm. of your everyday experience. And then, you know, obviously as young adults, we have other priorities and sort of explore what else is out there. And, you know, geographically and physically, I was moving around and going to different places and things like that. So that sense of regularity wasn't there. And quite frankly, the motivation waned a bit as well. But I think precisely because I was moving around, after a while, I began to seek out that sense of home. And, you know, after spending 11 years more or less away from home, Mass was the only consistent thing that could feel like home from place to place to place. You know, even in China, not understanding what's happening, but the motion of kneeling and standing is familiar. Like that ritual, that pattern of standing and sitting and kneeling, that was the experience of home that I could hold on to. And then even more in the Philippines, you know, with the availability of Mass and how, again, how warm and how into it people are. I mean, I think one of the more powerful things in the Philippines was during the Our Father, it's almost always sung. And you can really hear everybody truly singing. And if you were to like look around, like most people would have their eyes closed and they just like are fully singing with their full heart. And that's a really powerful experience. So if nothing else, I'd look forward to, you know, singing the Our Father in Mass every Sunday and just having that communal experience. So it got to the point now that the homily Whereas the homily before was a thing that kept me going, right? That I'm going to go because I really like this priest and I really like what he has to say. And it's sort of like your 10 or 15 minutes of inspirational speaking a week. That's what I would go for. Now it's, you know, strangely, it's the rituals, the stuff that as a kid that I felt was boring and repetitive and, you know, kind of turned me off to the whole experience. Now that's the stuff that I feel nourished by. And similar to you, I can't explain exactly why. But there is something about the habit, maybe like any kind of routine that people have that before they go to bed or when they wake up or when they go grocery shopping. There's just something about that life routine that is functional, right? So if you might go to the grocery store and walk down the same aisles, even if you don't necessarily need anything from that aisle, but if you've established that routine, you just walk that routine anyway. Or even, I don't know, at the office, you might do something as soon as you walk into the office, there's a certain routine you have. Prepare a cup of coffee or something like that. Even if you don't really need the coffee at that particular moment, there's something about the routine that's useful, right? And so there are elements to the mass that are nourishing and uplifting on their own, but simply the repetition and the coming back to it is also nourishing, I think, in my experience as well. Which is, for me, I think what makes it difficult as I consider how I'm going to talk about the mass tomorrow in class, because I feel so nourished by the very elements that I'm pretty sure my students feel turned off by. And there's this gap then in experience that exists. And it's the kind of thing that I like to be rational and I like to help students sort of see and understand something. But there's certain things that can't be explained without a certain amount of life experience.
Well, I think there's something beautiful about that too, and we've touched on it before, both, I mean, just in our regular conversations, but also with these recordings, that through the stages of our lives, we can, you know, things about our faith can speak to us in different ways, even though it may be the same thing. Whether it's a reading that we've heard, like the prodigal son or something, you've heard it so many times, you may have heard it so many times. And what spoke to you before as a child may be different as a teenager.
Absolutely.
Now as a, and so, I mean, with that, you know, because, you know, I do think about how Inky had talked about it, had asked that question. But, you know, because she sings in the choir and Ninong and Ninang sing in the choir and, you know, Tina and Bill will be there. You know, I just, there is a lot of, it does feel like home. There's a lot of comfort. It's one of the things I'm the most appreciative about nowadays, because we're close with the Castros, and so before we would just see them every few months or something, or maybe once a year, and now we get to see them every week.
Yeah,
and a lot of times it's the only time we get to see them, and when we see them, we're happy to see them, and they're happy to see us, and it may just be a few minutes at the end of Mass, but it's great. It's nourishing in that way too.
Yeah,
and when you're talking about being in different places, I remember how after William was born, we used to go to Our Lady of the Assumption in Claremont. And I went there, you know, in really like this grief-stricken, you know, traumatized, like very lonely feeling state. Really because I felt like I needed to talk to God. And this has less to do with the Mass and I guess just more to do with church. And maybe this would be a good topic for later, but for me, there really is a sense that, like, God is there. No matter how I'm feeling no matter how close or distant I feel with the source, like, with the warmth of my belief at the time. I don't know. I guess a lot of times I feel like God is there. He's there. I know he's, like, not just there, but I really do feel like he's in the church. And there's something universal about going to different churches and like, oh, well, he's there too. It's not like, well, I don't know. I'm not sure if he's in this one because I've never been here. It's like, oh, if I know that if there's a church, this sounds, you know, not the best, but if I need him, he's there. Like, I can go there.
Right.
Or that if there's a priest, there's still a priest. It's not like, I don't know about these Pennsylvania priests or, you know what I mean? It's just, there's something universal about that. And so with the ritual of the Mass itself, I think you're right. And we've been in Masses where in different languages too.
Yep.
And sometimes it's not the most connective when people are like, singing an opera in a different language and we don't understand it, or we're in like a beautiful, you know, church somewhere and, you know, everyone's praying different languages. There's something beautiful at the same time, but there's something that's also, you know, because you don't always understand. But I think the structure of the Mass, there's something comforting about that, so that even if you don't understand the words that people are saying, you're like, oh, even actually with the tone and the pacing, you're like, oh, this is the Our Father.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I'm just going to say the Our Father, because I know that's what everyone else is saying in different languages, but okay, I know. This is the part of it where we all say Our Father together.
You know, what's so funny, you know, this, we ask this question, why do we go to the Mass, and what motivates you to go to Mass? And what you've just said is the simplest answer and the truest answer. It's because God is there. But I think it's just so funny because of our personalities, right? I mean, I think if someone told us that, again, when we were high school students, we would question it. It seems too easy. It seems like a stock answer, like something that you would get in Sunday school.
I feel like my own response to that, especially if I was in high school, would have been, is he?
Yeah.
Is God right there?
Is he really there? How do you know he's there? And that's again, that chasm that I was talking about in terms of experience, right? We say he's there not purely as a matter of a statement of sort of blind, untested faith, but as a faith that has come from the experience of encountering God in the Mass. And I think that's why when you say it now as an adult versus a teenager, it just rings true.
And the Mass, as more of just a clarification before we finish up, is it just called the Mass because it's the mass of people?
No, geez.
Huh?
No.
It's not?
I don't know. We should look it up.
The Mass.
Well, you have liturgy and you have Eucharist. Yeah, liturgy is a celebration, right? So the liturgy of the Eucharist, the liturgy of the Word. So the Mass is made up of two liturgies.
Yeah, I know, but like the term the Mass, does that come from, is it short? Massachusetts? No, but it's just I'm assuming it just refers to like the Mass, like the group.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe.
What's out? Okay, commonly, one of the names by which the sacrament of the Eucharist is commonly adopted. And then, so etymology, from the Middle Latin, Missa, right? Which is being sent.
Oh.
Right, so from the concluding formula, ita missa est, go. Well, it says here, go, the dismissal is made, but you are missioned, you are sent, right? So, yeah, sense of mission. Yeah, although it says there have been other explanations. So, for example, the Germanic messe, which meant assembly. But there you go. So two possible.
Oh, I like them both.
Explanations.
Acceptable.
All right.